Hello, welcome back to Walker Wisdom. Today I am here joined with Teresa Choi. She is the assistant curator at the Ogunquit Museum of American Art and the assistant registrar at the Bowdoin College Museum of Art. Thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thanks, Andrew. Thanks so much for asking me. Hi, everyone.
Okay, so let's just get started. How would you describe your role as assistant registrar? And then also, how would you describe your role over at the Ogunquit Museum?
So, as far as I am aware, the assistant registrar position itself is fairly new at the BCMA. Previously, it had been more of an assistant to the registrar, who is Laura Lattman, for a long time now, more than 10 years, I think. And she comes to the museum from places like the Guggenheim and things like that. So very, very sort of seasoned professional. So the assistant registrar assists, you know, obviously the registrar in any kind of way, but there is a bit of sort of dividing and conquering because there's so much to do. So pretty much I've mostly been focused on pursuing rights and reproduction permissions for all of BCMA's publications, exhibitions, presentations, anything that's public facing, as well as processing any requests that come to us for works from our collection, of which are, you know, they're numerous and wonderfully fantastic works in our collection. So we always have people sort of asking for image rights and copyrights and things like that. So it's been some of that, as well as helping to rethink how we're using the database. There had been maybe some proposed enhancements to the database that has been kind of going, moving forward in phases. So just helping to work with Laura and also David Francis, who's our new tech specialist, who's, I believe, devoted just to the museum now. So it's been a lot of that. I've been also working closely with Suzanne Bergeron, who's the marketing and communications director, for any kind of press requests, because those are usually accompanied by, you know, we need high-res images, we need finalized captions, we need to make sure we have the right copyrights and permissions. So, which is sort of new work for me. I've done a lot of that in the past, having to do with large-scale publications for Storm King Art Center, for instance, or exhibition-related publications for the artists that I worked for, Virginia Overton. And it was something I enjoyed. It was something that required a lot of organizational skills, a lot of sort of spreadsheet management and file management, which I enjoy. So it's been, you know, I think people are wondering how I'd be able to transfer curatorial to registrar, but I believe I've got sort of strengths in both worlds and I enjoy it. So it's been great fun.
I feel like with both jobs, you're able to, with the Ogunquit, have an outlet for your creativity, while on the other side as a registrar, you're more analytical, logistical.
Yeah.
And use those skills, and I think that's a great combination of experiences.
Well, you know, actually at the Ogunquit Museum, because it is so small, there are a lot of registrarial tasks that I take on, you know, so I'm in charge of all of the shipping, receiving, releasing objects, the condition reporting. The registrar at the BCMA is really focused on the collection and loans and the objects that come in, so I'll get to work more on some condition reports that we're doing sort of in late August once I come back from being away, which I'm really looking forward to. And that's really sort of the kind of the heart, the sort of heart and soul of any kind of registration work is sort of object-based conservation and safe storage and how to make sure, you know, we're good stewards of the objects that we bring into our collection.
So how did you find your way to the BCMA? Because you said that you were at the Ogunquit first. And so what led you to take on an additional role?
The Ogunquit position was part-time, so I was just looking for something more. I was also looking for maybe a different kind of institution, one that was slightly larger, one that was had sort of an international collection. The Ogunquit Museum of American Art, as it says, right, right in the name of the museum, is devoted to American art of a certain period. My focus is more on contemporary art, which is obviously newer and tends to be more international. And I've also, in addition to Laura Lattman obviously being well-known, Anne and Frank Goodyear are very well known in the field, and I'd been sort of aware of them when they were at the Smithsonian, and so even the move to Maine, it was heralded as a new approach to museum directorship, and the BCMA has been a place where I've had my eye on to work at, so when I was offered this position, there was no questions. Yes, I would do it despite the commute, despite sort of the slight kind of, you know, shift in work focus. It's just a wonderful place to be. I've only been here since April, and it's been such a, you know, wonderful experience.
I'm so glad that you also felt the, like, warmth of the BCMA staff, especially like I did.
extremely welcoming.
Did you envision art being such a big role in your career and life?
I don't think I knew immediately that fine art would be. I was really interested in music, popular music, concert production. So my early work right after college was working for musicians and setting up rock shows. Mm-hmm. I moved to New York to try to pursue that and did that for a few years and then shifted to the performing arts and then shifted to development work. And that shifted to higher education. It was sort of kind mm-hmm. of, you know, like a chain of events.
Yeah.
I was working in development and fundraising stewardship, which was nice. I didn't find myself really taking to the role of fundraiser very well, but mm-hmm. I could do the research very well. I shifted into prospect research, so donor profiles, which was basically creating little biographies mm-hmm. for, you know, all kinds of people, which allowed me to kind of be creative in a way. But I just got to a point where I realized that it wasn't sort of what I wanted to keep doing. And I had had an art history degree
yes.
From the University of Virginia in 97. So that was a while back. We didn't even have contemporary art as a subject matter back then. I think our kind of most contemporary work stopped at the abstract expressionists in New York in the 1940s and 50s. Anyway, so that was, you know, art history background. But I did other things with it. But it's always something I love to do, museums, spending time with art. It's always something I did, even if I wasn't working in the field and living in a place like New York. And I also spent some time in Washington, D.C. as well, where I grew up. You know, these are cultural centers of our country, you know, and possibly the world. So museums and cultural offerings were just always around. It was just part of what I'm going to do when I have some time off on the weekend. I'm going to go to the Whitney or to MoMA and see what's up, you know, and see what's going on. So then I decided to go back for a master's in 2010. And prior to that, I was in D.C. So to just try to get back into the field of academic thinking and creating even references that I could use for a graduate program, I started taking classes at the Phillips Collection, which is a private museum in Washington, D.C., based on the collection of Duncan Phillips. Most famously is the Renoir painting, I'm forgetting, the boat party, you
yes.
know. So they had a wonderful Center for the Study of Modern Art, which has sort of had different collaborations with various institutions. I believe now it's really tied to maybe Maryland, University of Maryland, and has gone through partnerships with GW. At that time, it was in a partnership with the University of Illinois and a professor there named Suzanne Hudson, who's a well-known writer of contemporary painting. She was sort of leading the program there. So it was through her, through the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign campus, through that I got to meet sort of these wonderful professors, Suzanne Hudson, Hannah Higgins, Jennifer Greenbach, I can't remember her last name.
Yes.
She was more sort of early modern. Mm-hmm. So, you know, wonderful teachers who got me back into thinking critically about art and art history. And so with that training, I was able to get into Bard College's graduate program at the Center for Curatorial Studies, which is tied to their Hessel Museum of Art, you know, with a contemporary focus. So, and that was 2 years and a wonderful opportunity. And since 2012, I've been working kind of in the field of art. And that has meant at times working for free, working multiple jobs, you know. But there's sort of a trade-off doing what you love and, you know, how you want to spend your time making money and stuff. So
yeah. Do you have any advice for, like, pre-professionals trying to get into the art field?
Yeah, I would just, you know, I feel like when I've heard artists speak about sort of how to develop a career, develop opportunities, there's something that Mark DeSupero once said: don't say no to anything. That's why you always say yes to any project that gets put in front of you. No matter how big and famous you think you are, nothing is permanent, you know, so just say yes to everything. So I guess that sort of mentality of just like doing anything, as long as it doesn't compromise your morality or physical well-being, you know, say yes to anything and go for it. There's this idea that people who work in the arts, even though they're not artists, there's a creativity involved, right? There's something that you're drawn to about being creative, thinking creatively. Early on, I think I was volunteering at the Phillips Collection sort of while I was doing that. You know, how do I want to work in museums? Sort of insert yourself in any kind of way, volunteer, intern. Familiarize yourself with what a museum may need if museum work is your thing, if an artist collaborative is your thing, if you know, artists run gallery spaces, if independent gallery work is your thing, you know, just make it happen as much as you can. And even though it seems daunting, I'm drawing a blank on this woman's name, and I'll have to like get it to you. I'm Katie Siegel. Yeah, yes, Katie Siegel, so Hunter College, you know, wonderful professor and writer. She gave us a presentation one day, and it was just like a folder full of rejection letters, you know, and it was just like, so these people rejected me over, and she's like, she kept them, and they sort of became sort of these things of like badges of honor. Well, at least I tried. At least I got my letter out there. You know, you just, it's a lot of work, you know, and I'm not going to lie about that. And it can be disappointing because it's very competitive for sure. But I would just sort of, you know, keep trying, doing your thing. Follow, you know, what you're most interested in. Sometimes when you work in museums, there are definitely going to be shows or projects that you're going to be made to work on that you're not super excited about, you know, but sometimes when you do those things, you can meet people. It's definitely about kind of working on projects, developing a reputation for the kind of work that you do, that then people will be reminded of, oh, remember that person, they're really good at this, they know this person, they can do this, you know. Just keeping it out there. There's up and downs with sort of what an artist, they're doing very well or not, you know. It's up and down to any kind of career. You know, I wouldn't try not to get discouraged, unless, you know, if you're meant to do something else as well, then you're meant to do something else. Sorry, to go back to that Phillips collection.
Yeah.
So my supervisor, she was a volunteer kind of coordinator, and she was this wonderful sort of older woman who'd sort of had this, you know, kind of long life in Washington, D.C. And her advice to me was to make yourself somehow indispensable, you know, do work that only you can do, so then you become that person, that essential sort of, you know, kind of player in this game or whatever, or sort of whatever sort of the setup is, you know, that. And I sort of come back to that periodically, you know, what is it that only I can do that brings kind of value or substance or whatever to the team, you know, because it really is sort of a team effort. I think previously there had been a lot of focus on sort of these superstar curators, right? Okwi and Wizor, like, you know, like, you know, Massimiliano Gioni, like all these sort of like superstar kind of curators. Yes. And I feel like more and more, even though there is a lot of that still in the curatorial world, curatorial field especially, I do feel like there seems to be more of like a acknowledgement that it takes a large group of people to put together these, you know, we're getting to the level of the Venice Biennale, these incredibly complicated, large shows.
Thank you so much. How would you say your work-life balance is?
Oh, it's tough. It's tough. It was tough in music, too, because it was, I wanted to get into music because all I wanted to do was to go see shows, you know, to spend every sort of minute I could, like, in some club, you know, and listening for music and stuff. And I found that when I started to work in the business, I just didn't want to even go see music anymore, which was tough, you know, so... Yeah. You know, once I sort of left it, you know, I've kind of got back into it, you know, and obviously it's just a part of my sort of consciousness. Like if there's any time to do anything, it's either art or music, you know, for me, traveling. I'm a bit of a workaholic, you know, that's definitely a trait of mine that I have to sort of push against. There's like fear of failure and all that stuff that's sort of makes it work. But it's actually been helpful to be in a partnership. I moved up to Maine to sort of be with my partner, who I'd been in a long-distance relationship with for about 5 years, sort of Maine to New York for a long time in the sort of 20-teens. And sort of being around him, and he's not in the art world at all. He has a young son. Sort of these things that I have to, like, these are people that I need to sort of care about. Yes. And that's really helped me to kind of, okay, you have to leave this behind. You have to go back to and work and make
yourself.
Dinner
yes.
for, you know, my stepson and, you know, feed my dog and things like that. That's been helpful. I think when it was just me single in New York, there was this highly competitive mode, you know, you had to be in to succeed and whatever sort of you're doing in your 20s in New York, you know, it's all kind of one thing, you know, sort of work life, the sort of one thing. And then as you get older and less, less spry, you know, you just things quiet down. That's what happened for me anyway. And then Bowdoin is also, you know, things move at a fast pace. I sort of was surprised, you know, it sort of seems somewhat sort of calm from the outside,
no,
but then you get behind and people are running around, you know, papers are flying.
A weekly
and
meeting
stuff.
And yeah.
But it's even still with that, it's been one of the places that has sort of the best work-life balance that I've experienced sort of ever, you know, in kind of this long career of having many jobs in many places. It's been wonderfully helpful to work at BCMA, who, like, is really like, no, leave it behind. Don't let, you know, it's come back to it on Monday. When you're out, you know, and really kind of supporting that despite the people's own stresses to meet deadlines and stuff. So
I'm so happy that they're able to cater to their staff.
Tends to get voted sort of one of the best places to work in Maine, you know, and I'm finding that to be true. Not that I've worked in so many different places in Maine, but it's been great for me.
What would you say your most memorable experience is here at Bowdoin, but also Algonquin?
Well, the sort of upcoming at Algonquin, we're working with Meg Webster, who's an artist who I've admired for a while, and being able to work with her and the Paula Cooper Gallery, who represents her for a long time, that's just a huge honor. And it's still pending, so I am really anxious about it right now. We can talk in a couple of weeks when it's done, but that is extremely exciting, and I'm really looking forward to it, but I'm also really scared. So I think that's kind of what a lot of it is in art, especially when you get to a level where you get to deal and work with artists you've long admired, artists who are very well known, you know, who've had a long career, and to kind of get over that and just to make sure that the show goes off without a hitch, that it's presented, you know, in the best way, you know, that's negotiating sort of what the museum wants to say versus what the artist wants to say, which is always sort of a push and pull you'll come to find, especially as if you do more education work, how we interpret versus how an artist wants their works to be seen within a museum is doesn't always line up perfectly.
Could you say a few words about the upcoming show?
Sure. So Friday will be open to the public, Friday the 28th. We are preparing to a mid-season changeover at the Algonquin Museum. So we had some spring shows that have come down as of Monday. And so we'll be opening up Ever Baldwin Down the Line, who's a painter based in New York. Liam Lee, A Spontaneous Generation, who is a sort of a furniture designer, kind of a designer also based in Brooklyn. And then Meg Webster, a site-specific work at the Algonquin Museum. And she is an artist who is a sculptor who has long had sort of environmental impulses. She works with a lot of live material, but it's mostly about material that's readily available. So moss, sand, concrete, you know, things that are available at the hardware store. And she makes work on site. So with the other two shows, all of the objects have been delivered, and that's sort of a, you know, a sense of relief. But with Meg's show, we're going to be building essentially five sculptures sort of on site, using the nearest ocean water and filling up a giant tank, or building a 10.5-foot diameter circle out of sand, you know, building up a moss bed that'll be, you know, sort of the size of a person lying down, propped up about 4 feet in the air, you know, lying on a bed of peat moss and stuff. So we'll see how it goes. Wish me luck.
Oh my gosh. I can't even imagine the logistics of that. But I'm so excited to see it. One question is, throughout your extended experience in the art world, but other fields as well, how would you say the field is changing or has changed over the years?
Well, I guess I'm only really professional in the field about 10 years, you know. I think I mentioned I sort of had feel I'm watching sort of something moving away from sort of the superstar curator, sort of the one person that can do everything, to kind of a more team sort of acknowledgement, at least. That seems to be a thing. Mostly, I think sort of formally, I've just, you know, I've sort of watched the kind of rise of representational art kind of become more radical, and sort of the ebbing of maybe abstraction as being sort of a mode to radicality, you know, which it just feels like there's a moment where, like, the pendulum is shifting. It feels like a historical change, you know, something that maybe will be discussed and maybe has already been discussed sort of in an art historical context, which I think is interesting. You know, it's sort of a specific moment that I don't know if will be repeated, or when it'll be repeated again, and how it will be. It won't be the same exact thing. Something else will come back. Probably abstraction will come back up, you know, and become the thing. That's been sort of interesting. But in terms of how things operate, you know, I guess there's been sort of social reckonings that have happened recently, you know, not only with the BLM movement and sort of, you know, gender equality stuff, but maybe sort of workers. I know that there had been sort of rumblings after kind of the Occupy Wall Street stuff. There had been groups like Wage that had come up. I recently learned of an artist group, sort of more advocacy for art, mm-hmm. art workers, art museum workers, mm-hmm. artists. That's been great. Artist Commit was a new one that I just recently learned of, that they're devoted to sort of, what do they call them, climate impact reports. So they are working with some major institutions, you know, I believe, Mocha in LA and some artists like Pipilotti Rist who are sort of filling out these climate impact reports and submitting them to sort of this advocacy group, you know, and asking them to for their feedback for ways that we can change, you know, small things. I heard even, you know, think about painting your lettering on the walls versus using vinyl lettering, mm-hmm. you know, think about if you can, if you're in a position using sort of ship freight versus, you know, land, you know, sort of trucking, you know, things like that, you know, sort of small things that can be small and large things, you know, depending on what you can do. So that's sort of interesting to me, how art can make an impact somehow. That's not just about the market.
What has been your favorite exhibition, both either put on the BCMA and then outside of the BCMA or in the Ogunquit?
Well, I guess I worked on some really amazing exhibitions at Storm King. I was there for a few years. We helped to put together the Linda Benglis show with a sort of a display of her fountains, and she sort of created these works that, you know, she hadn't been able to finalize, you know, after proposing them like 20 years later. That was really such a thrill. It was at Storm King that I was able to meet Virginia Overton and got to work with her on her Whitney Museum shows mm-hmm. in 2016, which were amazing. She set up sort of these aquatic gardens on one of the roofs of the Whitney, and so being able to kind of gather plants as like an art project was truly amazing. The BCMA, I've really enjoyed so far working on kind of reframing the collection.
Oh,
I've
yes.
just been sort of working on it after the fact, kind of doing the registration of, you know, keeping track of any kind of rehangs that took place, you know, at the beginning of this year. But that's really given me an opportunity to look at a collection that is really not my specialty or kind of what I would think of as my interest, but it's drawn me in ways that I was mm-hmm. not expecting, you know, and I think the interpretation has been, you know, how the administration at BCMA has really tried to interpret these works that are kind of seen in a more critical eye lately in thoughtful ways and sort of respectful ways. It's been eye-opening, and it's just been, you know, I spent more time in that gallery than any of the others. It's a surprise to me whenever yes. I'm in there.
No, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to express my gratitude for you coming in today and giving such amazing responses to the questions I've been firing.
Thank you so much, Andrew. This was so fun.
No, likewise. Thank you so much for listening.